ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. So, David Hale, where does this whole story begin for you?
I, as so many people around Florida State in 2019, I was very confounded by their offensive ineptitude.
David Hale covers college football for ESPN.
And they lost a game to Boise State to open the 2019 season. They were up big in the first half.
Blackman, what a play. That was terrific. Gabe Neighbors with the touchdown catch. But how about the creativity again by Florida State's offense?
And then just completely collapsed.
Mahone, and he gets an easily touchdown. Boise State, the Broncos have the lead. 19 straight points.
The next day in his press conference, offensive coordinator Kendall Briles chalked up the loss to the fact that Florida State just couldn't get momentum. They had momentum, and then they lost momentum, and they couldn't get momentum back.
So what was working for you guys well, particularly in the first half, and I guess what changed in your mind in the second half?
Momentum. Momentum's the greatest player and coach on the field. When you got to run with it. When you don't have it, you got to try to find a way to get it back.
I said to myself, this is the worst possible excuse for terrible performance I've ever heard. And as all really self-righteous people do these days, I jumped onto Twitter. I simply tweeted, momentum is not a real thing. And the responses were not good. Somebody told me momentum is definitely a real thing in football. Another person said, it appears you're not that bright. And of course, my favorite one, trash take, delete your account. I mean, I've been told to delete my account many, many times, but this seemed like the most arbitrary reason for it. And then off we went. The next, you know, 2+ years I have spent trying to convince the masses of my seemingly wild theory that momentum is not a real thing.
It is the most overused word in all of sports. A cosmic boogeyman used to explain pretty much everything and also nothing. It is the wool that's been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth of what is actually happening in a game. Or at least that's what our colleague David Hale thinks about momentum. And he set out to prove it. So today, we invite you to take the red pill on momentum and see just how far this rabbit hole goes. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, December 22nd. This is ESPN Daily. So, David, you normally write about college football for ESPN, but this latest story, which I believe your editor has deemed either genius or the dumbest story that ESPN.com has ever published, is more of a personal quest, an odyssey of sorts, an odyssey into the world and reality of momentum, whether it is real or just a myth. So I want to start just by defining what momentum even is. Any good argument should start with a definition. So what is momentum as it's understood in sports?
So the dictionary will tell you it's very simply mass times velocity. But I don't think we need like a physics definition for this. Like we're using the term in a far more abstract way. I talked to a bunch of announcers, our pal Adam Amin, I talked to for a little while, and he was great in fact in saying that like we all just say it for sort of whatever we feel like it means.
The word momentum is a catch-all word for what could be a never-ending list of scientific or non-scientific variables. Like we're probably not even using the word correctly.
One of the things that Adam noted was like, at some point, somewhere, the first announcer used it. Like, was like, what does this sensation I'm feeling during this game feel like on like a 20-0 basketball run? It feels like mass in motion. Let's call it momentum. And then from there, it just cascaded outward into the world to the point where we're now overwhelmed with it on a regular basis. My frustration is about how often the word is used to mean so many different things. But among the just litany of way smarter people than me that I talked to for this story was a man by the name of David Caldwell, who is a linguistics professor at the University of South Australia. And his explanation is that is exactly the reason for the word.
Sport is gladiatorial. You win it or you lose it. Thumbs up or thumbs down. When you're in this world of we won or we lost, we're going well or we're going poorly, something like one mentioned as an abstract noun is it gets used because it can be used to signify lots of different units, lots of different goals.
In sports, we have a very black and white idea of success or failure. You win or you lose, you score or you don't, you gain a first down or you don't. And that we need a word that encompasses more gray area. And that's where momentum comes in.
I want to gaze at our navel here for a second and quantify some of this, David, because you talk about how it's heard all the time. How often on our air at ESPN are people saying the word momentum?
The one thing I want to say is we tried to take this very seriously, as dumb as the actual topic might be. We tried to take it seriously, so we looked for some actual analytics here. We looked at four different Saturdays from the 2020 and 2021 football seasons and found that on average, momentum as a term was used about 4.5 times a game.
Oh, wow.
And a big touchdown to give the Cyclones a little momentum here.
There's just been an ebb and flow. It's been Texas Tech throughout the first half and maybe a little momentum shift.
Then you get the defense some momentum going into the locker room.
But this is the moment where the momentum now is on the Texas sideline squarely.
But if it was just us, it'd be fine. But it's not, right? It's the actual stakeholders, the people on the field, the coaches and the athletes who say this all the time.
You know, first play. Mental error. I think that's what changed the momentum.
14-0, we had the turnover, and I fumbled the ball, and that really hurt us. And took a lot of momentum away. I mean, anytime you turn the ball over, it takes away the momentum.
Paul George got the and-one. Then Lance Stephenson hit a couple threes, and that turned the momentum.
And all of a sudden, I make this big bomb on him, and it turns the momentum around.
The story started out with a coach trying to use it as an explanation for losing, which to me, you know, the frustrating part is, like, if you think that this mystical force that you have no control over, that can't be easily defined and doesn't actually show up in data sets, is the reason you lost a football game, then to me, what that means is you're not figuring out the real reasons you lost a football game. But largely, when we talk about momentum, we're talking about it in a positive sense, like players who have momentum. And I would suggest that there's really not a single athlete on the planet who hasn't had some moment where they felt like, oh, I have momentum. Momentum is on my side now. And so I started thinking about, like, what are the most egregiously over the top? There's no doubt about it that somebody is going to use the term momentum when talking about this game. And for me, there was absolutely no better example than the 2016 Alamo Bowl.
And David, I'm just warning you here, we are 100% going to put an electronic music track titled Momentum under your description of this game.
TCU played Oregon, and in this game, TCU, like half its offensive personnel, was hurt, and Trevon Boykin got suspended before the game. So a former walk-on backup quarterback by the name of Bram Kohlhausen became the starter for this one game, his one and only start in a four-year college career. And in this game, Oregon went up 31-0 at halftime before their own quarterback got hurt. And then Kohlhausen leads this epic comeback, the largest comeback in bowl history. And in triple overtime, TCU wins a football game.
And low snap, Lockie pressured, stepping up. Lockie throws, incomplete!
A remarkable comeback here in San Antonio. TCU left for dead, shut out in the first half, down 31-0. Sends this one into overtime and wins it.
So I call up Bram Kohlhausen and I say, momentum? Was this what the cause was? And Bram Kohlhausen said to me, you're darn right it was. Of course there was momentum. I'm a believer in momentum. And when you're down 31-0, believing in that momentum being possible is a really important thing.
It was something you feel in the stadium. I think you could feel it in the crowd. Everybody started taking these small positives and building off of them. Once the momentum shifted, it was a lot easier to move the football and go score.
So if that's how he feels, and again, I value that opinion. He did it. He's the guy. But if that's how he feels, it also feels like we could try to tell the story of that game, David, without even mentioning momentum at all. Like, if you're going to do a little revisionist history, how would you characterize why all of that actually happened the way it did?
So here's the things that happened in that game. Vernon Adams, the Oregon quarterback, got hurt, and so Oregon did not score again in the second half of that game. That's one problem. There was a fluke fumble on a kickoff return by Oregon that set up a touchdown. You know, Kohlhausen, for a guy who hadn't started, had gotten a lot of practice reps over the years, and those young guys weren't without talent. You could very easily just say, like, okay, it was a bunch of guys who hadn't really played recently on the field together, getting their sea legs and getting, you know, feeling more comfortable as the game goes along. All of that feels very natural and understandable, not some mythical force that somehow hurt one team and helped another team for reasons that are utterly inexplicable in the grand scheme of the universe. And that would be my argument, except the problem that I keep coming back to, and this is one that I have to admit is one of the major flaws in my theory of the non-existence of momentum, is that in the moment, even when they were down like 14 points, Kohlhausen said, I could feel it. Like, it was a genuine sensation. And it's like, you know, if you're cold, we don't say, well, cold isn't a real thing. It's a matter, it's a state of mind. We don't say that. And so, I mean, it's true that he felt a sensation.
I'm not that religious of a guy, but it's kind of like a religion. It's nothing that you can really see, touch, or feel, but you have to experience it to really understand when it happened and what happened.
And so it's hard to ignore this notion that as much as I don't think there is some mythical force controlling who wins or loses a football game, we all feel it, and typically we tend to feel it at the exact same time. It is a communal spiritual event.
I would say that my senior year of college, there was one night playing Beirut or beer pong, as you might call it, where I felt Kohlhausen-esque. I felt a metaphysical force pushing me forward, David. And that's the other weird thing about this, right? Because you're talking about this, again, this grand sort of scheme, this cosmic spiritual realm, and he is not taking credit for it personally. He is giving credit. And that spiritual aspect to this, I know this brought you to seek someone who's very well-versed in that realm. Who did you talk to and what did you find?
So first off, I look forward to the 30 for 30 documentary on your beer pong performance. That's going to be a great one.
Hit four in a row on the brink of elimination, David. No big deal. Who's counting?
It's going to be epic TV. So I want to blame the wonderful Bram Kohlhausen. I have two daughters, both under five, and I read them those books by Laura Numeroff that are like, if you give a moose a muffin or if you give a cat a cookie, and it's the whole
classics.
Plot of the story. Yes, classics. You know, you start with this very normal, well, as normal as giving a moose a muffin can be. You start with this one thing, and then the plot line diverts to increasingly unexpected, ridiculous changes in like what the next step would be in the story. And that's pretty much how this came about. And it started because Kohlhausen mentioned sort of the spiritual aspect of momentum and said it feels like an act of faith, that you believe that there is something greater than you that you can tap into and find some success because of it.
All right, coming up, our spiritual journey takes us, of course, to South Bend.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, David, at this point in your momentum odyssey, you've just told us how it has this almost spiritual component to it, how momentum is almost this article of faith for athletes. So what did you decide to do next?
So I thought, all right, well, let's investigate that. And so my next call was to a priest at Notre Dame who also happens to be the team chaplain for the Notre Dame football team. What better possible like Venn diagram for this particular story at this point could there be than a guy who works with both God and Notre Dame football?
So when you went to this man of God with this very pressing concern, what wisdom did he share?
Father Nate Wills, by the way, you see how faith has played a role in his life because he was very patient about having this conversation with me, despite what I'm sure was better things to do.
I mean, momentum is real, first and foremost. I mean, that I think that there's no denying it. And I think it's just something that's especially a part of football.
He actually saw a lot of similarities, too. And his point was that, you know, faith is not a tangible item.
The definition of faith is the assent, you know, assent of the intellect and the will to God. And I think it's similar in that sense in that it involves, you know, people sort of humbling themselves and their will to say, we can do this together. We can believe collectively together. So I think it's very real.
In a lot of cases, like your feeling of faith is very similar to a feeling of momentum in that you know, if you start looking for it, you can find it very easily. And there is a very real sensation when you have a strong faith that you know, there is some larger force being enacted upon me. And if I can just, you know, commune with that force that my life will be better as a result. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, maybe this is a perfect answer. But he says to me at the end, the thing that is very important to understand is that this isn't magic. This isn't even necessarily like God reaching down from the heavens to change your life. It is largely about an entire life of building and building and building positive events and building on your relationship with God. And that whole, you know, macro sense of events is what brings you to this point, not like this micro event of like, boom, now momentum is on my side. One of the games he pointed to was Notre Dame's win over Clemson last year.
And there was such a beautiful momentum where, you know, I just really believe like, all right, we're going to do this thing. And it feels magical in the moment. But, you know, you look back and say, okay, well, it was pretty cool that Kyren Williams was picking up every blitz, you know, in the Clemson game. You know, and there were like little things that all built toward it.
And he's like, I could see either momentum or a work of God or whatever in every blitz pickup that Kyren Williams made. And I remember watching that game and thinking pretty much the same thing at the time because Kyren Williams was so good in that game. But he's like, that's not a miracle and it's not momentum. It is Kyren Williams working on his craft day after day after day after day.
And I think that's the same thing with faith. I think we often want those extraordinary moments of those lightning bolt moments in our lives where we feel very tangibly the presence of God. But, you know, for most people in their faith, it doesn't work like that.
So I was like, well, thanks a lot, Father. You gave me an answer, then you pulled it away from me again.
Yeah, I like that God's blitz pickup led to touchdown Jesus. You know, I like how we can draw a real straight line through all of these symbols, David. But hold on, because, you know, I was raised Catholic. I know that oftentimes the phrase that is repeated the most often in church is God is love, which is another complication that you discovered in your story. What did you find on the love front?
Well, this was the last thing that Father Will said to me was, it might be a little like love because it is impossible to quantify, but everybody has felt love, right? So in my, if you give a moose momentum plot line, my next step was like, let's go out and talk to somebody who understands love. So I reached out to Dr. Helen Fisher, who I found via a Google search, and it turns out she studies love for the Kinsey Institute, but not just like the feeling of love, but she hooks people up to like MRIs and machines that study like brain chemistry to find out what is actually happening in the brain when a person falls in love. And she also said, this isn't a crazy notion that what momentum is could be very much from a strictly biological sense, very much like falling in love.
First of all, anything that you feel is something is happening in the brain. It's not your imagination. For example, when you fall in love with somebody, all of your past experiences will lead you to a moment when you actually fall in love with somebody. But that's different from the actual feeling of falling in love.
Her whole point was focusing in on that feeling that Bram Kohlhausen talked about, that feeling of momentum that we have all felt, and that there is legitimate biological brain chemistry changes when you are feeling that.
Yeah, I don't know if I should be heartened or disturbed that, you know, my marriage to my wife is a lot like the 2016 Alamo Bowl, now that I think about it.
I'll be honest with you, there are people who might end up reading this story that need some years of therapy following because it has forced them to recalibrate their entire lives. So I get it. I get it. But it, I mean, look, it was a really a fascinating thing because I'm not going to get into all of the brain chemistry because I will not remember it. The gist of it is that there is a chemical released by your brain called dopamine, which I'm sure most people have probably heard of, that triggers certain responses within your body and your personality. And some of those things are confidence, which of course feels very similar to momentum.
What's going on in the brain is that you're getting a dopamine surge. And it's affecting a tiny little factory near the base of the brain called the VTA, or the ventral tegmental area. And that is giving you energy, focus, motivation, confidence, and optimism, certainty of your decision. And that's what happens with momentum.
If that's the case, right? If it is strictly your cognitive reaction to a series of events that then sets you up for future success, like this is actually really good information for a coach to have, because if you can then, you know, create that consciously through coaching or a way that you coach a player, or, you know, we do like mindfulness meditation and all of that kind of stuff already. Maybe if you can tap into how to create that brain chemistry and make that happen independently, well, now maybe we're on to something. Now maybe it's something that you could create a genuine competitive advantage.
Yeah, David, it would basically be a superpower. So before my brain starts spinning on all of this, let's take a break. And when we return, I need you to tell me what you found when you consulted an oracle named Mike Leach.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, David, momentum and how to stop momentum was another part of your research here. So stopping momentum, how is that done?
Right. So this was a really fascinating part to me. And in some ways, I think the biggest takeaway that I had in all of this came from asking this question. And the first thing is, when we talk about momentum, it is almost exclusively a positive thing. Almost any coach in the country, is momentum a real thing? And they will say, hell yes, it is. We want to get momentum in every game. We got to get those good plays happening. And then I say, well, what about when everything's going against you and you have, for lack of a better term, anti-momentum? And they're like, well, that's not real. You just got to focus on on the next play. You know, you got to turn the page. You got to have a short memory. Momentum cannot exist without its corollary. Because if somebody's doing something good, the opponent must be doing something bad. Football or any sport is a zero-sum game. But no one wants to look at the negative side of it. And yet, to me, that was almost the more fascinating thing, because there is always somebody trying to stop you from success in a sporting event. But often when we talk about negative momentum, we are talking about you stopping yourself from failure. The failure is almost less about what the other team is doing than it is about your own inability to get out of your own way. And so I started asking folks about that. Dr. Fred McMahon is a neuropsychologist at North Texas, University of North Texas, and he does essentially the same thing that we were talking about Dr. Fisher, the love expert, doing, is that he hooks his patients up to like machines that measure changes in how the brain is functioning during a game. And this, to me, might be the single most convincing bit of evidence in favor or denial of momentum, is that he says, like, when you're tracking this stuff, almost all of the time, success increases linearly. So the longer you play the game, the better you get at it. That makes perfect intuitive sense.
If you see this trajectory of a person, right, you would expect the more they play a video game, the better they're going to get, obviously. But it should be a pretty linear line that just constantly increases.
But he said, routinely, there are little blips in that otherwise linear graph where you get better or you get worse. And that his explanation from that is strictly momentum.
But if all of a sudden you see a drop in that line, then what explains that? Why exactly did it curve down? Why are they not performing at the same level all of a sudden? And so that might be an explanation of momentum.
And the way to get rid of it, positive or negative, is to step away from playing the game for a little while. And this all made perfect sense to me too, because I started thinking about, like, a team goes on a run in a basketball game. What does the opposing coach do?
Calls a timeout, of course.
Calls timeout. Right. Or like, we've seen this all the time in college football this year. A team gets hot. What happens to the opposition? Somebody on the opposition's defense, suddenly they got a leg cramp and they got to go down and they got to take a timeout while they drag the player, and all the fans are booing. In some ways, the very real effect of that is to help curb momentum, to create a time variable. So the idea of a coach calling a timeout during a particularly bad series of events is really smart, psychological. It has actual evidence that suggests it works.
So if momentum is validated in some sense by Dr. McMahon's research into video games, what does this all suggest, David, about like that anti-momentum thing?
So I started thinking, like, all right, well, if this is all just a thing that's in our head, that to me suggests that momentum is effectively a placebo effect. It is a thing that is very real, but caused or created strictly within ourselves. And so I reached out to another doctor, Luana Coloca, who is at University of Maryland, and she studies the placebo effect. And I was talking to her all about this and negative momentum and how do you get out of it. And the fascinating thing to me was that she said that when she studies the placebo effect, it is much harder to convince someone that a negative effect is all in their head than it is a positive one. One of the things she said, like, you can convince people that they can lift more weight than they actually should be able to, and they do. But then as soon as you tell them, no, we actually made all that up, you can't lift that much weight, then they can't do it anymore. So, like, what they would do is, I guess, like, have them, like, I don't know, bench pressing or whatever, and they would adjust the amount of weight but lie to the person about how much weight it was. So let's take me, for example. I would probably struggle to lift, like, 50 pounds. So what they do is they put 70 pounds on there but tell me it's 30 pounds, and I will lift it because I think that I'm lifting a different weight than I'm actually lifting. And if it's a negative thing, I am much more likely to firmly and, like, deeply believe in the negative, whereas I will be much more likely to assume that something positive was a fluke.
Wait, David, that's a profound observation about humanity, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, that to me, I don't know if it answers any questions about momentum, but that is the thing I walked away thinking, like, oh my God, we are an entire species of people who are pessimists, who don't believe in ourselves. But the other thing, you know, as we talked about earlier, like, what are the potential advantages in this for a coach, for a coaching staff? And one of the things that I started thinking about after this is, like, those coaches who are complete, you know, jackasses, who are, like, yelling at their players constantly about how much they suck, like, they're only reinforcing this very human, natural state. Whereas coaches, you know, the Ted Lassos of the world who tell you to believe and that you are good enough, like, creating that mindset actually probably has a genuine effect on your ability to steer out of negative events and to prolong positive events.
So this ability to prolong positive momentum and stop negative momentum, David, that is self-evidently something that would be of enormous interest to coaches. Did you talk to any of your college football sources about this question?
There's this is sort of one of those weird things from doing this research, too, is that I talked to Mike Leach because I sort of was looking for the antithesis of the Bram Kohlhausen story.
David, I just like how you were saying to yourself, you know what? This episode isn't weird enough. Let's get Mike Leach in here, the coach of Mississippi State and noted weirdo. I don't even think he could possibly mind me saying that at this point. So does Mike Leach believe in momentum?
Yes, he believes in it.
You know, to me, it's kind of the unified energy that exists when you're executing really well. And I think it goes beyond just execution. You know, there's kind of a mental positive quality to it.
So when I asked him about anti-momentum or negative momentum, and I said, well, how do you stop that? And he said, well, you got to fall back on the things that you've practiced. You've got to fall back on the techniques and the routines and the repetition of practice. And that's how you get out of this death spiral of negative momentum.
Well, one is you have to have precise preparation as specifically as you possibly can, drilled over and over. Okay. And then when they hit rough times, they fall back on their training, okay? Mm-hmm. And the better the training is, the more they have to fall back on.
And oddly, that's more or less exactly what, like, a lot of the scientists said is, like, what is momentum? Well, it's being really good at doing the things you repeat. And what is negative momentum? Well, it's, like, forgetting how to do those things that you have been repeating over and over again. And so the best way to fix it is to get back to that. And so, I'm always hesitant to consider Mike Leach a genius because he might also just be a lunatic, at least on this one particular thing, if not on many, many, many other topics, including candy corn. The science suggests Mike Leach is right. And he was like, yeah, that's interesting. He's like, you know who would be good to talk to about this is Malcolm Gladwell. And I was like, I don't think Malcolm Gladwell is going to take my calls, Mike Leach, but I appreciate your optimism on this. But the funny thing is that as I started digging into this, I came full circle back around to Malcolm Gladwell, speaking of people much smarter than I am, who had written in one of his books about a guy named Amos Tversky, which I he is a really fascinating dude.
Yes.
But Amos Tversky was a, much like me, a believer that momentum did not exist. And he had the best quote I think I've ever heard on this. He said of arguing against momentum, I've had 100 arguments about this. I've won them all and I've convinced no one. And that is exactly how I feel after doing this. I am no less a believer that I'm right, but I am a believer that no one else is going to agree with me on this.
Well, as you try to, you know, convert people, that's part of this religious metaphor that we're now torturing and extending here. But in your attempt to convert others to your side of things, have you been at all successful?
You know, it's, I think this is another good bit of humanity takeaway is like, let's find little victories in life. So I talked to my good friend, Wes Durham, about this, and he is a terrific play-by-play guy. I think one of the best in the business. And his dad, Woody, was the longtime voice of North Carolina basketball. And so he has broadcasting like legitimately in his DNA. He is great at this. And he said, yes, we overuse momentum.
I hate to say this because my dad would go crazy if I told you this. I probably say it to describe too many different things, and I need to learn to use other words. And that's kind of one of those challenges you find yourself doing in the broadcast business is to find a word other than momentum. It's probably overused or misused in a way that is, it lessens itself.
There are a dozen words that would more specifically explain what is happening than momentum. And it is probably laziness that we say this very often about things that could be much better described in another way. And I thought, you know what? All right, small victory here. Wes is going to take this problem more seriously. And maybe if Wes does, then someone else will say, like, Wes isn't saying momentum so much anymore. What happened? Oh, he decided to find more specific words. You know what? I'm going to do that too. And it cascades out from there. And suddenly it catches on as things tend to do in the world. And then I thought to myself, well, crap, what does that mean? That's really just this idea gaining momentum, isn't it? Damn it. I've come back on myself.
David Hale, before I go off and reconsider everything I know and love, thank you for both your genius and also, even more importantly, your lunacy. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.